Hello to my tribe of people doing their very best to walk this earth and heal their hearts and then, of course, their bodies, because when we heal our hearts, our bodies follow. I never know what I'm going to say when I open these podcasts. What's up? What's up, guys? How are you? It's Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Happy to be here with you today. So this week, I am coming down from the most magical weekend from my online virtual retreat. That was just this past weekend, May 21st through the 23rd. And we had an incredible experience, as always. I don't have another one planned yet, but when I do, I'll certainly let you know. It's always blows my mind a little bit ever since this COVID world began that we can do so much virtually. I never knew. Never in my life would I have had the confidence to create a weekend retreat online and think that it would be, first of all, something anyone wanted to do prior to our new world of quarantine-ish living. And I also just I would have self-doubted the efficacy, the ability to connect, because I'm so all about energy and being in the room. But I'm going to tell you, and I know every one of you guys out there that's been to any of the three of them that we ran since the beginning of lockdown can attest, it's amazing what we can do. It's amazing what we can do. And human beings are so inspirational to me because they just rise to the moment. You know, we can't be together, so I'm going to bring my whole self. I'm going to bring my whole heart and all my vulnerability and all my willingness to this online forum, and we're really going to do some incredible healing together. It was magical. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. So thank you guys, every one of you out there who's listening, who went to any of those retreats and any of the mini retreats I've offered throughout the year. I have a couple more coming up. In June, one is on self-compassion and one is on the fawn response, fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. If you're interested in either of those mini retreats, they're only 2 hours long and they are on the weekends, so I can accommodate people who work 9 to 5 or work Monday through Friday as best as possible. And they're linked on my website, thecurechronicpain.com. So definitely check those out. And if indeed you want to make that jump back into the world of being with people, I am incredibly excited for my Omega retreat. And I'm smiling as I say this because I'm always like, oh, Nicole, you're such like a, everything is like, yay, 10 times the excitement. But I mean it. I'm just like this. But also I really mean it. Omega is going to be next level. Ruthie Lindsey will be there. Look her up. Ruthie Lindsey, Lindsey. Incredible, incredible speaker. So inspirational. Her energy is just like nothing I've ever met. And then my dream team, Athena Allred, Caroline Dewey, Lisa Schlossberg, and Erin Chavone, and I will all be there. And my dear friend, Danielle First, who is also one of the people I've interviewed for this podcast, will be coming with her full musical, I guess her setup. She's bringing her piano and all of her speakers and everything, and we're going to sing together. We're going to play music, and we're going to sing, and we're going to learn, and we're going to heal. We'll probably dance a little too. I can't wait. So there's all that, and that's all linked up my website, or you can go to eomega.org and search for my name, Nicole Sachs, or The Cure for Chronic Pain. Actually, Freedom from Chronic Pain is the name of the retreat. So excited. So today we are going to talk about the concept of control. Control and I have a deep, loving, intimate relationship. Control and I have worked together through my body, through my behavior. We have a love-hate thing going on, Control and me. Control and I. My kids are so funny. They're always doing correcting themselves because I've been such a correct English teacher for my whole time raising them. I was raised by a father who English was his fifth language, so he knew how to speak it perfectly. And anyway, so Control and I have had an intimate relationship, and it's affected me since I was younger than I could even realize what was going on, and it affected me. It still affects me today, but it affected me deeply through being a young mother and being in the early stages of creating this brand and building this business. And today it controls me, I would say, and I'm being honest, about 80% less. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how control might be affecting your life. Maybe you are also a control addict. Maybe it's affecting your bodily systems like it did mine. And we're gonna talk about the trauma response that control is responding to, and why indeed we feel such safety when we are controlling things, and why that is actually fake safety and never going to help us beyond, of course, the moment. And it's okay if it helps you in the moment, but just remembering that life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. And potentially, control is stealing from you more than it is serving you. And that's going to be up to you. Each of us has to decide that for ourselves. So we're going to talk about that today. And before we do, I just want to tell you a little bit about the Curable app. So Curable is a sponsor of this podcast. Curable is an app located on your phone, on your computer. It is something that can be with you anytime. And it is an app for chronic pain, mind, body, learning, and work, and healing. And I say this time and again, I am only one person. Even my Omega instructors and my therapists and my retreats, everything I do can only do so much. An app in the palm of your hand is there for you whenever you need it. It's used by hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It's the first app that was ever created that delivers evidence-based methods for chronic pain self-care. They teach you all about the brain science. I know I talk a lot about the brain and the nervous system and our communication around that. Curable teaches you that. You can read it. You can have meditations about it. They allow you to allow that message to sink in. And so you can really start to rewire your neural pathways. They have meditations. They have writing exercises. They have an online community, a supportive community. So another place online for you to connect with like-minded people who are doing this work. And then they have this really cool thing they do. It's only a couple times a year, so it's something you have to sign up for, but it's called Curable Groups, and they do a 12-week intensive where you actually get together with a group, you bond with other people who are doing this, you actually have personal connections, and they consult with like Dr. Strax and Dr. Schubner, all the big names in mind-body medicine, and it's an incredible experience. So I'm a big fan of Curable. And I invite you to be too. And if you would like to get 50% off a year's membership, you just need to go to www.getcurable/Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, and it will automatically take 50% off your first year's membership. So check that out and take advantage of it. I think it would be really great. It's a great addendum to all the work you're doing here with me, and I highly recommend it. Curable. Okay, so let's talk about control. All right, I need to center myself because this is such an important topic, and I want to start at the beginning. I became a person who relied on control long before I had any awareness about it. I don't know, and I don't think any of us really know what our earliest childhood experiences were that lead us to be a certain way. I mean, obviously we can hear stories, but very few of us have distinct memory of the first couple years of our lives. So I don't actually know why I became a person so obsessed with control. I mean, I had loving parents. Obviously they weren't perfect. And also you have to take into consideration that there can be generational trauma that happens. I mean, my father's side of the family, 88 members of his family, of my lineage, were lost their lives in Auschwitz during World War II. So much so that there is a plaque dedicated to the Ferber family. That's my maiden name, Nicole Ferber, at Auschwitz. And so my father was conceived months after my grandfather had escaped from a work camp in Poland. And after his parents had been ripped from his arms at 16. So you don't know exactly why you have trauma. I mean, there's so many reasons that we embody the pain and suffering that our parents went through. So there's that. There's, you know, the instability of whatever was happening in my early years. But by the time I became aware that I could have a hand in my life, I wanted it. I wanted that hand. I was a paranoid student. And also I was raised by a very critical father. So it occurred to me really young. I remember in second grade, I was concerned that I wasn't going to get into an Ivy League school, which is like the most ridiculous thing I can imagine now. But I was concerned about that. And I would control as much as I could my environment in order to feel like I was doing my best. But the control that started happening in my life went into the subconscious realm, meaning my body took it up where my mind left it off. Because, you know, when we're children, we might have a sense of control. We might have a semblance of control in terms of what we can do. But children are so powerless just in the very nature of the fact that they're children. You know, we don't get to make our own choices. We don't get to say what we eat or when we sleep or when it's time to get in the car or when it's time to go to the doctor or the dentist or school. The dentist was huge panic for me. That's another story. You know, there are a lot of things that cause us tremendous disruption that part of, you know, they're part of life. I'm not trying to be a victim about this. I mean, you're a kid. You got to live and your parents get to tell you what to do. But piled on with the self-imposed fear and shame and things that happen as a result of living a life, we also are children who are powerless to our circumstances, whatever they may be. And so one of the things that started happening to me very, very young, probably 4 or 5 years old, is I started being constipated. Constipation is such a classic control thing. It's not something that we choose, and it's not something that we can necessarily unchoose easily, but it's a withholding. It's a withholding. It's a way that our bodies take the baton when our mind-body system is overwhelmed. And I was obviously, as a very young child, overwhelmed. And I think it's worth it to say that also your nature. Your nature comes into this. So we're all born with a certain nature. And anyone who has more than one child knows that nurture is not everything, because you have these kids and one is laid back and seriously, mom, no big thing. I got this. And another one is, give me the list. Give me the instructions. I'm so worried. What if this doesn't happen? And they're being both raised by you. Children are born with different natures. And some people are born very empathic and very sensitive and very concerned. And I was one of those. I was very concerned about people. I was very vigilant. I noticed everything, people's moods, people's, if they're mad, if they're happy, but it looks like they're not happy with me. And I'm sure like 80% of it I was making up, because that's what we do. We're so self-centered as human beings. We think everything's about us. But you know, all of this is complicated, but my nature also played into this, that I was scanning the landscape always to make sure that I was safe and things were okay, as a nature, still like that. And so so I got really constipated, and it became a trauma in itself, because first of all, it's really embarrassing. And second of all, it's painful. And third of all, and we're not going to get too graphic here, it requires interventions that are both embarrassing and painful. And I was going through that as a young child. And it was one of the ways I also practiced shame and practiced shutting myself down, because it was so uncomfortable physically and emotionally for me to talk about it. I would just sometimes not tell my parents that I hadn't been to the bathroom in like a week. And when it did happen, it was bad. And so that was something that happened to me very young. But I'm aware now that it was my body's way of taking up control, taking it out of my hands, because obviously my heart wasn't large enough to handle the amount of fear and worry and anxiety and concern and awareness. I mean, I was so aware. I think it's uncanny how aware I am. And, you know, if you look at it from a spiritual aspect, I guess I was built aware because that has helped me so much in my career and in my ability to help others and in my ability to tap into what I need to say to you, you know, in this medium. But as a kid, it was a lot. It's still a lot, but it was really a lot as a kid. So constipation was one way. And, you know, some people have different manifestations of control. And I call all these kind of controls fake safety, because when we enact low vibration coping mechanisms, yes, they keep us safe. Okay, so I'm not discounting them. Like any defense mechanism, just like dissociation or defensiveness or regression or any of the ways that we are subconsciously and reflexively moving into a defensive posture, they help us in the moment. They get us through something that the nervous system deems too dangerous to live through, which is all perception, but they get us through those moments. Other examples of control that are fake safety are OCD. OCD behaviors, you know, if I just line up my shoes perfectly before I go to school, I'll have a good day, or I'll be safe today, or maybe mommy and daddy won't be screaming when I get home. Now, we both know that that has nothing to do with the kind of day you're going to have or whether mommy and daddy are going to be able to control their emotions in front of you. But that's what we need at the time. It's fake safety. Everything we use is good until it expires. Even my constipation, which I could see nothing good about at the time, I look back on my life and I know how I was feeling. And obviously my system, in a loving and in a protective fashion, was giving me this constipation because it needed to offload something somewhere. It was too much for my little heart and my little psyche to take, and so it offloaded it there. You know, just like a child with OCD or an adult with OCD, eating disorders, another very common way that young people seek control. You know, your parents are this, and school is this, and your friends are this, and your, you know, first boyfriend did this and whatever else, capital T stuff, abuse, neglect. What's the one thing that no one can force you to do? They cannot force you to eat, unless, of course, you get so sick that you get, you know, a feeding tube. But I'm talking about milder forms of eating disorders, children and young people. And like I said, even total adults up until this moment, because we all use what we use until we are done using it. Eating disorders are a form of control. Once again, not putting them down, not saying that they're any sort of form of weakness. I also struggled to some extent in my high school years, and honestly, my whole life, with some level of using food for control. All these things I've worked tremendously hard to heal. But I have also a lot of empathy for those going through it, because I know what it feels like, and I know what it feels like to be a person with a level of static anxiety that is so pervasive and so constant that you feel as if you need to control what you can control. So those are some common ways that control can manifest in young people who inherently have very little control over their lives. And then we move into behaviors of control. And once again, this is stuff that can start young, but it can also be very pervasive and very common in adults. One of the things I did when I had children is I was one of those. I was one of those, and I look back and I'm like, my goodness, but I timed the naps. I wrote down everything they ate and when they pooped, and I stressed endlessly if those two things were not coinciding with what the parenting book said was the ideal amount of sleep per night for your infant's brain development. My God. If I'm like embarrassed to say this, but I'm not, because I know that everything I say is a gift to somebody who's out there being like, I'm doing that. When I was breastfeeding, there's this concept of hind milk, which is once the baby nurses. So at the beginning, they get, I don't know, four milk. You guys are laughing at me. Whatever, the first milk, which may be four milk, but I know that the nutrient-rich milk is the hind milk, the milk that starts to let down after the child's been nursing for a few minutes. And for whatever reason, my inconvenient babies were not interested in nursing after the first 2 or 3 minutes. They would just suck it down for a couple of minutes, and then they would just pull off the boob. And similar to eating disorders in terms of control, infants control, where like they don't want to suck anymore, they don't suck. You cannot force a child to have a bottle or a breast. So I would stress endlessly that nobody was getting hind milk. And then I would pump, and I was so sore and so wrung out and used up. And even if I was in the middle of the night, I would paranoid. I needed to control this. I needed to pump out the hind milk because at least they could have it tomorrow. I am telling you, this was a personal hell that I lived in with the amount of control I needed to have over my life. And my ex-husband and I are very, very, very close friends. And I constantly apologize to him for the person he must have had to live with. And he's kind of like, yeah, you were pretty bad, but he's nice about it now. But anyway, so that's one way that we control. And you know, and whatever, however else it applies to you, you know, whatever you're doing in your life, if you are putting this control on yourself, so maybe your control is coming through perfectionism. And I remember I interviewed a mom once on my podcast, and I think her name was Angela. I think she was my first real-time heal, and she had burning mouth, and she would tell me how she had to be the perfect mom. Like their lunch had to be packed a certain way, and if there was like a party at school, she had to have all the best, you know, stuff, and had to be there in a certain way and had to show up in a certain way. And she was so upset, and I think angry, that her kids were unappreciative of her efforts. And I was trying to help her understand that what she was trying to get out of children, that level of appreciation and acknowledgement that we all want, I mean, we're human, we want that, is unfair, because kids are just people living their own existence, trying to walk their own path. And here we are enacting our stuff on them by trying to be so perfect, which they probably don't care about and didn't even ask for in the first place, and then being angry at them when they don't respond to us the way we want them to. And so many of our parents did that to us. And so, you know, perhaps you're doing that to yourself. I never quite went that far with that. I mean, I definitely put a lot of pressure on myself, but it doesn't matter. I mean, this is certainly not all about me. It's about however this is showing up in you, and acknowledging that these forms of control and these methods of survival work only until they expire. And you know when they expire, when either they're making you more uncomfortable than they're making you comfortable, when you're angry at everyone in your life for not appreciating you enough for all of your efforts at perfection or goodism or codependency, you know, or people pleasing. Oh my goodness, people pleasing. So like, if you are using people pleasing as a form of control, so you are trying to keep yourself safe. Once again, this is also really tied with the fawn response. We're going to be talking a lot about this at the fawning mini retreat. If you are really tied to people pleasing as a form of control, because if you just keep everyone happy, maybe you'll be safe. That also brings up a lot of rage in you. Could be subconscious, could be conscious, that you need to repress, because nobody ever appreciates the amount of work a people pleaser does in terms of pleasing them. And in addition, it doesn't solve the problems you're looking for it to solve, which is very frustrating and scary. And so awareness, so I say this a lot on my Instagram account when I put out new content every day on Instagram, and it's one of the places where I connect most intimately with you guys. So come follow me at Nicole Sachs LCSW if you want to hear about what I'm doing there. But anyway, one of the things that I find is so prevalent in the conversation on Instagram is how frustrated people are at the ways their defense mechanisms, their control mechanisms, their safety seeking is not working for them anymore. It's, you know, it's more painful than it is helpful. And the same thing can be said for when your eating disorder becomes something that you know is killing you, or when your constipation or your irritable bowel is something where it's owning you and it's, you want to take the pressure off of your body. I mean, that's what my whole work is about. My whole work is about having people understand your body is taking up the slack for what your heart and your mind-body system can no longer tolerate and carry on their own. And when that starts to become something that is hurting you more than it's protecting you, that's when people find me. And that's when I say, hey, honey, there's a way we can turn this around. We can reverse this. We can open this. So what I was starting to say before in terms of Instagram is what I often say to people is, obviously a podcast or an Instagram post, or, you know, if you watch my IGTV series, I Am Evidence, or any of those things, they're not going to heal you in like one sitting. What I'm trying to do is raise awareness in you. You know, when we try to do like work for causes around the world, people always say we're raising awareness. We're normalizing something. We're raising people's understanding that this thing exists. Well, I am seeking to raise awareness in you that there are things happening in you that you might be quite asleep to. I was certainly asleep to the level of control I was enacting in my life and what it was for. I could have told you, yeah, I'm a little bit of a stickler for the sleep schedule. Like I could have said that, but I did not understand at the time that this was pathological levels of control in order to not feel what really was out of control, which is, hello, I am 30 years old, which I don't know, that might sound old if you're 17, but it's freaking young. It's young, and I had this baby, and it felt like the responsibility was huge, and it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time in my marriage. It was a difficult time caring for the baby who she was not an easy infant. And then, of course, just the loss of your own personal freedom in your own personal life, you know, when you have a new baby, you're not allowed to be just who you were. And also, I put so much pressure on myself to be the perfect mom. You know, this is all childhood stuff. But when I was young, I had an idea that motherhood was going to be magical and I was going to be the best at it because I was so full of love. Like whatever you think of me today, which I imagine you think like I'm loving to the point of mildly cheesy, I knew that about myself as a young child. So it was obvious to me, I'm going to be the best mom ever. And it's going to be so easy for me because look how I can love. And yet, to some extent, it has been a great help that I am. So it's so easy for me to express and receive love, definitely. But until I got past myself and my defense mechanisms and my fear and my reflexive ways of controlling my world, I would have been a terrible parent. I would have enacted all my stuff on my kids, and that's why I'm so, so grateful that I found this work through my pain, which was the greatest gift of my lifetime. I say that without reservation, so I could awaken to what was happening, what was really happening in myself, and I could do the work to rectify it. But anyway, so when I started to awaken to this, I became when you first awaken to anything, there's a bit of despair because you're like, wait a second, it's expired. It's not working for me anymore. You know, it's if it's physical stuff like constipation or IBS or anxiety, it's pretty obvious when it's not working for you anymore. But if it's just controlling behaviors, if you just think like, oh, you know, I care about sleep, or of course I care about my child's nutrition, or, you know, what do you mean I'm a people pleaser? I just like everyone to be happy, or, you know, whatever. However, what do you mean I'm a perfectionist? I'm just doing my best, you know, whatever it is that is your thing. When you realize it's not working for you anymore, when you realize it's expired, there can be some despair right there, because it's like the dark night of the soul. You know, what you were doing, the door to what you were doing has closed behind you, but perhaps the door to what's next has not yet opened for you. So you're standing in a hallway of darkness. And if you're there, please know, first of all, I'm right there with you. I get it. I hear you. I feel you. And second of all, you're going to be okay. This is a human life. Left foot, right foot, breathe. You are going to be okay. You're in the right place. You're listening to the right content. You can do this. But, you know, sometimes it feels scary in the moment. So when you first awaken and you develop this awareness that I'm always talking about on Instagram, is that I'm here to raise your awareness about what's happening within you, it can feel scary. It can feel uncomfortable. Welcome that. Welcome it. One of the things I was saying a lot this past weekend at the virtual retreat is any uncomfortable feeling, anything that you feel like you can't handle, anything that you feel like makes your chest get tight and your throat get tight and all those anxiety physical sensations start happening, just don't push it away. Don't resist it. What you resist persists. It will just become bigger. It will just scream louder. Say, I see you. I don't like the feeling of you, and I don't quite know what to do with you yet, but I do see you. So I'm going to back up on my kindergarten carpet. We did a lot of talk this weekend about our kindergarten carpet. There's a huge kindergarten carpet. There's room enough for everyone and every part of everyone. So when you feel that uncomfortable part coming, you just scoot back, make room on your kindergarten carpet, and tell it to have a seat. As Elizabeth Gilbert says, we must talk to fear kindly and gently in a nurturing mother voice. If you shut fear down, it will just scream louder. But if you speak to fear with kindness, with compassion, with boundaries, and with confident, with a confident air, even if you're scared. So basically, the way we talk to fear and anxiety and all this discomfort and all this despair and all this unknowing, we scoot aside, we make room on the kindergarten carpet, we say, have a seat, you can be here, you know, you can't create the curriculum and you can't teach the class and you can't tell us what we're eating for lunch, but you are welcome to stay. And even if you cry and scream the whole time, you know, we'll listen over you. You're allowed to stay. And if we welcome kindly, compassionately, but also with stern boundaries, these parts of ourselves, they stop growing so big. They stop requiring our brains and our nervous systems to reflexively choose these lower vibration control mechanisms in order to keep us safe. If you're looking to overcome your OCD or your eating disorder or your anxiety or your perfectionism or your physical symptoms that have taken up the baton from these more thinky situations like back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, fibromyalgia, migraines, pelvic pain, many and varied diagnoses. Check out my website if you're looking to understand if what you have applies. Thecureforchronicpain.com, which I think I forgot to mention. If you're aware that it's no longer working for you and you're looking to overcome these things that are keeping you stuck, it's just important to understand that we invite all the parts of ourselves in. Then we think about the three facets of my work: believe, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself. Believe means you're understanding what I'm saying. You're understanding that your addiction to control has caused you to have to repress a lot of emotions, and it's no longer feeling safe for you to rely on that control. And when it's not feeling safe anymore, your nervous system can't use it anymore properly, and that's when you start to feel really panicked, or maybe your symptoms flare. It's okay. Just stay with me. Just stay with me. I'm right here. Hold my hand. Belief. I believe this is what's happening in my body. I can accept that we live in a mind-body system, and sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and they're interchangeable. And today my heart is too full and my body is taken over. Okay, I believe it. I see it. Do the work. Do your journal speak practice, your meditation, everything I teach. Check it out on the resources page of my website if you need more. If you need more guidance from me, I have 2 online courses. You can take those. So much great information out there to heal. And then patience and kindness for yourself. You are living a human life. You've been through whatever you've been through. Your body is reflexively dealing with a lot of cause and effect stuff that doesn't just undo itself overnight, but it can be done. And I will kind of tie this up with a bow to say that I live now as a 49-year-old woman raising 3 teenagers. My kids are 18, 16, and 13. They have teenagerish lives, a lot of joy and a lot of pain. I am running this business. I'm trying really hard all the time to get my message out there. Sometimes I feel a bit desperate about it because I know how life-changing it is, and like I just want everybody to know about it, but you know, so that can cause me anxiety. I'm living in a human body that's 49 years old, all those things. And I feel almost no need to control any of it. And I say that with absolute calm confidence because I understand now that those methods of control were not keeping me safe. I needed them until I needed them. So there's no shame in whatever it is that manufactured itself in me, that manifested itself through my behavior. It's okay. I don't shame myself. I don't blame myself. But today I show up and I am open to whatever's next. I have been able through this work to replace my fear with curiosity. And instead of anticipating with pre-grieving and with fear and trepidation, the next thing I can say with my hands open, my palms up, my face up, I can say, what's next? I wonder. I'm so curious what it will feel like when this happens or that happens. Let's see. Both joy and pain are an ability to connect with ourselves more deeply. And I really welcome all of it. Do I want all of it? No. Do I want death and mourning and grief and children's heartache and rejection in my work and life changes? Do I want that stuff? Absolutely no. Absolutely no. The thought of being really sad and in despair is not something I welcome. But am I scared of it? And do I need to control my life in order for it not to happen? Also a hard no. I'm just here for the big show. So, and that's not because I'm special. And that's not because there's magic happening around me. And that's not because I am more educated or better than anyone else. It's because I've done the hard work, and the hard work is available to you too. Anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. All right. So as always, such a pleasure to be with you today. I hope that my experience and the experience that I've had working with thousands of people around the world can help you personally today, because that's always my goal. Remember that if you would like extra support, the Curable app is really fantastic, and you can get 50% off an entire year's membership. Just go to www.getcurable.com/Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E. And if you're enjoying this podcast, it would be a great favor to me. Just take a moment of your day and go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps other people like you find the podcast, and that means a lot to me. And that's that for now. So if you are listening to this on the day that it drops, have a beautiful weekend, and I will see you next week. This has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast. I will see you then. Bye-bye.